everyone. This is Gordon, W2 Tango Tango Tango. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Stations with or without emergency or prairie traffic, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. 2JEK. So, good evening, everybody. The Bergen Amateur Association Technical Net is open to amateur radio operators, whether or not they are members. As long as they can operate in the 2-meter band in these here United States, you're more than welcome to join us for that. In fact, we encourage you to do so. Technical Net is a discussion, and therefore, in order to have a discussion, we need to have people check in. With or without questions, with or without comments, we need to know who's out there in order to properly discern how to scope out answers, how to provide answers, and possibly even who we can reach out to for their viewpoint on something. So even if you don't have a question for the net, please consider checking in. The way we check into the tech net is a little different than other nets. We check in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether or not we have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. So it's call sign, name, question or comment, both, or none of the above. And we go from there. Once we do the roll, we then proceed to go through the list of questions and comments. It's pretty much how it works. So, with that happy thought already dispensed with, let's talk about who might want to join us first. So, let's try alpha calls tonight first. Any station whose call sign begins with the letter A, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo.
K2BAR, this is K2ZO, Jim. No questions or comments at this time.
Okay. A, K, it's all the same. All right, so anybody whose call sign begins with Kilo 2, let's hear from you, K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2DBU, mostly listening tonight, no questions.
That's good, I know your name. How are you, Steve? Good to hear you. And, but you might get polled for something or another. Depends on how the subjects go tonight. Any other kilos?
This is K2WQD with Quebec Delta. And the name is John.
Okay, is that Kilo Charlie 2 Whiskey Quebec Delta?
That's correct.
Good evening, John. Congratulations on the new call. And we'll have a question for you, I can assure you of that. Probably have one for Steve as well. Any other kilos, please call K2BAR.
K2ID, Ben. No questions or comments at this moment.
Good evening, Ben. I have you. There was a station who doubled with you. Who was that?
This is K2AMI, K2 Alpha Mike India. Name is Sony. There's no questions, and I'll just be listening.
Good evening, Tony. Good to hear you. Any other kilos? Alrighty, let's go to the ever-popular Novembers. Any station whose call time begins with November?
This is NS2K Jim. No question at this point.
This is N2OEL. One interesting antenna question.
Oh, all antenna questions are interesting, Noel. Good evening. Okay, we finally have a question. I was getting worried. Already reaching into my bag of tricks. Any other Novembers? Okay, now let's get to Whiskey Station. If any station whose call sign begins with Whiskey, please call K2BAR.
This is W2JEK, Don, with a comment.
Excellent. Good evening, Donald. Let's see. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, with a question.
Wowie Kazowie. Hi, Charlie. A question. Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Any more whiskeys? All right, anybody who's late to the net, didn't check in, has a different format, call sign, whatever, who'd like to check in, we'd really appreciate if you would check in, even if you're just planning to listen. Please call K2BAR. Guess that worked well. Okay. Well, we have two questions and a comment, so let's take them in that order. Noel, your, quote, interesting antenna question. Take it away from K2BAR.
Okay, interesting antenna question. You know, I've been thinking of a vertical operating mobile with my van. And then I said, you know, I could put a full-size 10-meter dipole because the fiberglass part of the van is, the motorhome is 30 inches high in the back, and it arcs out over the front of the vehicle. So I said, if I fed the thing right in the center of the top of the fiberglass there and ran the wires around the outside edge, I would have 5 foot spacing. So I'd go 2.5 feet to the left, 2.5 feet to the right, and then with a 8 foot 10-meter antenna, I'd still have to do, 6.5 feet. I said, gee, you know, I'm going to get more distance than that. I got almost 16 feet. I could do a 15-meter and a 20-meter. The question comes up, if I did that, what kind of wild interactions would I get with the air conditioning unit on the center of the van? Would it work more efficiently than a normal mobile antenna setup, which is just strictly a whiff antenna or, you know, a screwdriver antenna? Or would I be friends with RF, since I'll be in the driving at the far end of the antenna? Back to that. This is 10-2-OEM.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago I did that 10-meter thing on my old van with PVC piping on front and back just to hold the dipole up, and it worked out pretty well. She had a center support too. It was a little V-shaped, but it did fit, and worked out very well, despite the fact it was only maybe 2.5 feet above the roof rack. But yeah, it does work. It's a marvelous idea. Has anyone else tried something like this? Okay. Let me throw out an idea here. How about you using the equivalent of, let's say, a broader, you know, linearly loaded set of whips, you know, something bigger, like not like a pair of hamsticks, but maybe fatter, aimed fore and aft. And although you could use hamsticks, but if you made something bigger, linearly loaded, you might have slightly better characteristics. In fact, you could even do it on 40 and get much of the characteristics of an Invis antenna on your van. So you might consider that. Does anybody have any thoughts?
Well, yeah, but you had a center dipole. And what I'm talking about is basically a U antenna fed in the middle of the back. That's a little bit different.
So feed point. It's a half wave antenna, so where are you putting the feed point?
Feed point in the center, right above the center of the rear, the two rear doors. The antenna would go approximately 2.5 feet to the left, and the other leg would go 2.5 feet to the right. And it would make approximately a 90-degree angle and head towards the front of the van along the edge of the fiberglass roof. So basically, it's a big U. And I'm wondering if the two legs would cancel each other.
No, I don't think so, because you'll have one going forward, one going aft, right?
No, they'd both be going forward. One on the left side, one on the right side.
I'm sorry, yeah. Okay. Well, not exactly. I mean, you can make a V-sloper, and that's essentially what you've done, except you've made yours a little more flat. You certainly can do that. If you want gain in the direction of travel, you could even do what Jim had me do on 80 meters for field day, and that is make half wave or full wave legs and, you know, bring them toward the front. And but you'll have some interesting matching to do. Jim, you want to talk about that?
I kind of missed what he's doing. I didn't. He's talking about a U. Actually, there has been a couple of antennas like that in some of the handbooks, but I'm not sure I understand what he's doing. And so I'm not tuned in on what you're trying to do.
Can I explain again? Okay, a V-shaped dipole that's where both legs are kind of angled toward the front of the vehicle, feeding it in the back center.
GU.
Well, it's got to go forward a little bit, right, to have room for the wire?
Yeah. The center point will be right above the doors, about 30 inches above the metal on the fiberglass roof. Then it would go 2.5 feet to the left, 2.5 feet to the right, make a 90 degree. Then the rest of it would go forward, one on the right side, one on the left side. I'm wondering if the two legs cancel each other out, since they're basically going parallel to each other, about 5 foot apart.
Well, as I said, it's a V dipole in forward. So it's just like a sloping, albeit a little more bent up than most, a sloping forward dipole, Jim.
The only problem with doing that is sometimes you lose bandwidth. You know, if you tighten up an inverted V, you'll notice the bandwidth. But other than that, it won't cancel, and it'll work fine.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, so the question is about linearly loading it. I'm wondering if he should, you know, for the upper band, for the lower frequencies, you know, linearly load it and feed it from the middle of the van forward and backward, and do something like that, so as not to tighten up on the bandwidth. I figure if he makes the coils fairly large, then he won't have too much loss of bandwidth like you would if you tighten up on a V.
Yeah, but I could do 10 meter, 15, and 20 full size. There'd be no coils.
Okay, is that... yeah, I guess you could do that. That would be fine. One thing I think you might want to do is put some ferrites just below the feed point of that antenna to keep the RF away from the coax. You know, just keep it inside.
Basically, it's going to look like a loop. It'll look like that 2 meter horizontal loop that you had on your radio, except a lot bigger.
Okay, that works for me. Anybody have any comments? I think the next thing to think about, Mr. Noel, is to go build it and try it.
Yes, now the next question is, should I put loading coils as a trap dipole, or should I put wires 4 inches apart and have parallel dipoles with a common feed?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure. Anybody's thoughts?
Depends on what you're trying to do, Noel. If you're trying to put parallel dipoles together, remember, if they're harmonically like 20 and 40, they work fine. If they're not like 15 and 12, they tend to interact. So in that case, you're much better off using a decoupling stub or maybe a trap or whatever. I don't like traps. But for low power, they're probably not too bad. But you'll find that if you build a parallel dipole and make it, for instance, by 4080 works fine. But I certainly wouldn't try a 15 and 20 because that would be, you know, the SWR would be high. You'd be much better off taking an antenna and feeding it off center a little bit and then using it that way.
That certainly makes sense. You follow that, Noel?
Yeah, I could do an OCD and feed it any place, any one of the corners, for instance. I have about 60 feet four, a little less than 5 feet across, so I have 42 feet. What kind of antenna can I fit in 42 feet?
Meter dipole.
You could put a 40 meter dipole with the ends folded down.
Well, I'm thinking, how about an OCD that would work, 10, 15, and 20?
Depends where you fed it.
Why don't you explain that, Jim?
And you need to feed it at a point where you've got a current maximum there. If you take a look at the design, if you take a look at the you just do a Google search on off-center fed dipole, and you'll see a couple of different designs. Designing them for the higher frequencies requires you a different type of design than you want for like a 4080. Yes, you can easily do that. You can make one. And if you had an off-center fed on the one end, and then you on the long end, you could fold it off or down or something like that, and it would work fine.
Okie dokie. And, Noel, can you exercise that?
Yeah, we can try them all. But we're about to leave for vacation. Won't be back till Tuesday night.
Ah, good for you. Excellent. We are going to be home this weekend. Yay. I need to be home. All right. Anybody else with ideas on this one? Anybody have any other experiences with dipole-ish kind of things in a mobile environment? Okay, very good. Any more from you, Noel?
Nope, nothing more from me.
Well, thank you. That was a good question. All righty, Mr. Don, you had a comment. W2JEK from K2BAR.
K2BAR, group W2JEK, good evening, everybody. Just want to announce that the DE test sessions are approved by the school, and we will have a test session on September 17th at 7 p.m. on a Friday night. I have another one on October 9th, which is the date of our hamfest. That's at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the third one in November, on November 19th. That's a Friday night at 7 o'clock. And these are all on the ARRL's website now, and I believe on the Barrett calendar as well. So that's what I have to announce. That's all I have. Thank you. Back to Net.
All righty. Very good. Thank you, Don. Let's see. Anybody have any questions for Don about the test sessions, or the ham fest for that matter, to either Don or Jim or Tony? Okie doke. Well, it'll be a fine time. Alrighty, next item, let's see, is Mr. Charlie, you have a question. KTBAR, go ahead.
Something at 550 with the same power would go three times farther than something at 1.5 megahertz. Checking that N2 OEM.
Absolutely. You always want to be at the bottom end of the band. Absolutely. I've actually heard WABC in Normandy, which was kind of neat. When I was in France, I spent 3 weeks in the summer in Normandy, and it was delightful to be able to, you know, DX the AM broadcast band. So many neat signals. really was cool. Anyway, that was back in the 70s. Jeez, that's a long time ago. All right. So what else? Anybody else want to comment on this?
No comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. Well, I guess some of the absorption is in the D layer, which, of course, really sucks it up during the day. And it goes away at night, giving us the sky waves so we can hear those broadcast stations. One of the interesting things in the new radio, when I put the roofing filters in, set them at 6 kc, I can hear a broadcast station every 10 kc using a 80 meter dipole. Pretty cool. And I was listening around to one of my old favorites that I used to listen to years ago, WWVA, Wheeling, West Virginia. You remember those guys that used to advertise tombstones? And they were very, very weak. And just at the same time, I happened to see a little news article that they lost their antenna in a storm. So they're using some kind of a haywire thing. So I thought that would be interesting for anybody who's a broadcast band DXer. But when I was in Bermuda, just with a handheld radio, what I used to do is take my handheld radio, wrap wire around it, take about 30 feet of wire, just wrap the wire around it and throw it out the window, and easily heard 770, no problem at all, ABC. Back to that, K2ZO.
From Bermuda, that's pretty good. I'm trying to remember what WWVA's, frequency was. Do you remember, Jim?
I gotta go look it up.
Yeah, I'm in the process of doing that now myself. I'll look it up. Well, actually, if you can look it up, that'd be helpful. Because you got me curious. I've got my 8040 trap dipole connected to my Pro 2, so I was gonna take a shot at it. Maybe a little harder here because we have so many broadcast stations close at hand. And, although I will say this, these radios aren't too bad with rejection of, you don't get as many intermod products as you might think. The front ends are pretty selective. I was amazed. Not generating too many intermodulation products in the front end. In any case, anybody else have comments about AM broadcast DXing and ways to make it happen?
I found something else on the internet.
Go ahead.
Local channels are 1230, 1240, 1340, and so forth. Stations and their maximum transmitted power of 1,000 watts use a non-directional antenna. Regional channels use higher power transmitters, typically up to 20,000 watts, and directional antennas. I'm not sure about WKBW. I used to listen to it regularly at night down here, New Jersey. Clear Channel Station used to be clear, but beginning in the early 1980s, additional stations were authorized to operate on Clear Channel stations at night, Clear Channel frequency, often with greatly reduced power and directional antennas. Clear Channel stations can use 50,000 watts of power, and most use non-directional antennas. In their early days of radio, no other stations could operate on a Clear Channel's frequency between sunset and sunrise. So, a Clear Channel station could be heard over much of the country at night. So, with my car radio, when I used to drive back home from Dundee, New York, down here, I would often listen to I'd be listening to Boston, I'd be listening to Buffalo, I'd be listening to Chicago, I'd be listening to, you know, some other stations, but of course I was rock and roll, so I didn't listen to the Clear Channel one. Like Rochester had a fine music station, it was Clear Channel. And you can go on the internet, just look at the Clear Channel AM stations for your search, and you'll see the whole history. So yes, you can hear these things. Unbelievable. This is Vince William.
You know, is the station in Rochester, WHAS?
I don't remember. It was a fine music station, basically. And I don't think... I'll go look it up. I think it was maybe WHAS. I have to go look it up. Take me a moment.
W2JEK, WHAS, I think that one's Louisville, Kentucky, Gordon.
You're right, it is. It is Louisville. The hell am I thinking of? Well, I'll think of it in a minute. There's definitely a signal on 1170, but man, for some reason there's something going on. That's where WWVA is. And I'm definitely hearing it, but boy, not liking what I'm hearing. For sure. Well, let me do this. Let me get the other thing is, to some of these modern radios, you have to make sure you do something simple like disable the antenna tuner if you actually want to hear on anything on the show on the AM broadcast band. That's another key point. I'm just trying to think, what was it? Oh God, I'll look it up. I'll look up the Rochester stations later, but. Yeah, I don't know how much of an antenna on my Pro 3, oh, it's 1060 and 1160, silly boy. So anyway, there's certainly an opportunity to AM broadcast DX, if you will, in any number of good places. So do keep that in mind and, you know, and try to do that. Anybody have any other stations there or AM broadcast episodes that they'd like to talk about?
Hey, how about WOWO, Fort Wayne, Indiana? They boom in here.
WJJM in Rochester, 1180. We find music now. It's talk radio and news.
It's AM. Of course it's talk radio.
Okay, how about XCRF?
I picked up on this, but in some countries, including Canada, they're trying to actually move stations off the AM broadcast band in order to provide better service to the listeners. So they're trying to migrate stations to the FM broadcast band, amazingly enough.
Did you ever listen to XCRF?
Yeah. XCRX, I mean? XCRF? No, what is it? What's the one that was the five-letter call? XERMX, was it?
I don't know, but XCRF was just across the border in Laredo, Texas there, just on the other side in Mexico with like 500 kW or some unbelievable amount of power. And they finally kind of cooled it.
Yeah, they had an interesting shtick. Didn't they, like, sell their time or to either Bible Pounders or whatever? I'm trying to remember what the deal was with them. I remember hearing a whole story about that.
Yes, they sold their airtime to people in the USA who had all kinds of axe to grind, who, of course, had... run into various conflicts with the FCC and all kinds of other things. So here they were right across the border in Mexico, and of course their antennas were oriented to put it all into the USA. So there used to be some very interesting programs on there, but things have kind of calmed down now.
Yeah, Wolfman Jack was on that station. I'm just Googling that. I knew there was something about that. Texas radio preachers, time brokered format, hee-haw bands,
chatty DJ that would come under the category of Wolfman Jack and a few others. Yeah, exactly.
That's where Wolfman Jack got started.
Do you remember when he was on WNBC in New York before they ended their music format?
And he had a special set of false teeth made that had points on them.
Yeah, he was a character. Okay. Did anyone ever listen to Radio Caroline or one of the other Radio North Sea International, one of those other ones? Okay. Well, you want another interesting story that was the bane of the British and Dutch governments. Look up Radio Caroline. I remember hearing that one when I was over there, too. That was kind of neat. Operating from a ship in the in the North Sea. So I'm just kind of curious what people use to listen on AM broadcast when they're DXing. Which ham gear are they using? What kind of antenna are they using typically? Whether it's casual or serious. I'm kind of curious what people have in mind. So let's just roll through the list. Jim, what's your pleasure?
Well, you've kind of thinned the herd down, but I used to have an SP600 JX21, which was quite a beast. It took three men and a boy just to move that mother around. But what a receiver, and what audio. I used to do a lot of broadcast band DXing with that thing, and just listening around, and just using the 160 trap-loaded dipole, inductively loaded dipole, just had coils in it, and it was amazing. That worked quite well. But I still used to get, I mean, it's an old radio, and I would get overload. It wasn't all that easy. It was lots of fun. Now, with the new radio, with the roofing filters, it's kind of duck soup. The other radio that I have, of course, is the SDR-IQ, which is the software-defined radio, which is absolutely unbelievable on the broadcast band. Just so sharp and so clear and so tight that you can listen to anything you want to. Back to that, K2ZO.
So let me ask you about that. Are you able to listen to DRM with that too? Do you have a DRM software module?
Oh, I do. You need a software module to do DRM, and at the present time, I have not done so. Yes, you can.
You should probably explain what that is so we don't sound like we're talking in tongues or codes or something. DRM is Digital Radio Mondial, or Digital Radio Global. It's a mode that's semi-proprietary, but some of the broadcasters are playing with it as a way to provide bandwidth-efficient, quieting signals on HF and AM. And other high noise potential environments, and it works remarkably well. It really does, but it's digital. It's that simple, but it does work, and it's pretty effective. If you look up Digital Radio Mondial, MONDIALE, you should find some stuff on it. If you look up simply DRM, you'll also get digital rights management, which is a technique for providing validation or authentication for streaming content, mostly in IPTV, but not necessarily restricted to that. And so DRM can be a little confusing. So look out, if you want, Google the capability for DRM or Digital Radio Mondial.
Anyway, anybody else have any comments about this?
NS2K.
Ah, yes, Mr. NS2K. Go ahead, Jim.
During my wee years, growing up in northern Maine, I used to spend many, many an evening listening to, well, at one time period, my little early transistor radio. They were pretty primitive at the time, but there wasn't a whole lot of interference either up there. And I'd listen to Long John Neville and Gene Shepherd and on and on and on OR and various other things for hour after hour until I couldn't stay awake any longer. But later on, one of my neighbors gave me an Atwater Kent, and that opened up a few other frequencies. Listened to lots of shortwave stuff, typically hooked up to the radiator and a wire out the window or strung across in the attic. I had various schemes over the years, but it didn't seem to take too much at that time in the mid to late 60s. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. Kept me going for a long, long time. And it's okay.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious, who else has stuff to... let's see, KC2VBU, what did you listen on when you were, you know, a brat, or when you were younger? Ah, Steve went past his bedtime. KC2WQD, what about you, John? And welcome to Ham Radio.
KC2WQD. Yeah, when I was a brat, as it were, I had a regenerative heat kit, regenerative radio, and my parents got me for Christmas or something, and I built that. It used to change bands by opening a trap door on top of the radio and sticking your hand in there and pulling the coil out, sticking a coil for a different band in. It was really quite sensitive. You know, regenerative radios can be very effective. And, you didn't need a lot of rejection in those days. There weren't that many things. Well, I used to listen to a lot of shortwave and put the old wire hanging out the window or out to a tree and connected it to the radiator pipe, you know, that sort of thing. And I learned something, and that was don't stick your hand inside the radio unless you unplug it first. I got myself a heck of a shock. I'll never forget that. Not the last shock I got either, though. I guess I didn't learn too much. But I used to spend many, many hours listening to... Actually, that's how I got interested in amateur radio. I used to listen to, you know, all the activity on the bands. And that was a lot of fun. But then, when I did get into ham radio, I had an HQ-110, which is... Everybody knows the HQ Hamilton model, and I go 720, I think it was, with a 60 watt phone with a, I guess, 50 watt plate modulation. I just really had a lot of punch, but that's my radio days. But a friend of mine's a dentist, and this is a real primitive radio, probably the most primitive. He told me he had a patient that was getting WABC 77 through a filling. He had to redo the guy's filling because I guess it was setting up a diode or something in there, and it was vibrating his jawbone, and he could hear the radio station at night while he was laying in bed. Anybody ever hear of that before? Back to net control, KC2WQD.
The old dental bimetal junction problem. Yeah, well, the dentist planted a diode in the guy's head, so he had to redo it. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that happens from time to time. You'll hear stories of those kinds of things. Pretty cool. Anybody else have any thoughts about regen receivers or even better?
metal detection.
Who am I with a comment?
Trying to go.
Sorry, I was out of the room when you requested my information on what I used to listen to, but I was fortunate enough to have an older black transoceanic radio that seemed to work pretty good. I didn't extend any antennas. I just they had a frequency loop that you'd take out of the back of the radio, and you could stick it on a window or raise it in a different spot in the room, and that seemed to be a pretty good radio for distant reception. Old transoceanic. I don't remember the model anymore, though.
Well, I remember those. My grandparents had one of those transoceanics with the, you know, fiberboard loop antenna that you had a couple of inches of wire, essentially. You kind of unhooked it from the back of the chassis or inside the case. I can't remember how it was affixed normally, but you placed it in the windowsill, and you had yourself a little loop antenna. Yep, I remember that very, very well. That was neat. My grandparents had left it in their cottage in the Adirondacks, so yet again, it was in a quiet place, and that was kind of good. That was my first exposure to AM broadcast. Other than, I can also remember simply driving up Route 17, and we'd hit the New York border on our way to, you know, the Thruway, and, you know, then the Northway. And, you know, we would get by Hilburn before it was incorporated, actually, back in the 60s. And my father would say, go tune the radio. And I'd tune around, and I'd hear French-speaking stations. I think it was, what, 860? I think it was a French station from Montreal, around there. I think it's 860 or 890. I can't remember which, but it's in that area. And that was kind of neat. And even though, you know, WCBS was in the neighborhood, it wasn't that close. It was just far enough away that, you know, in the evening you could start, in a car radio, you could start hearing Montreal, and I thought it was fascinating. So I would pass the time cranking the dial and listening to radio stations. My father would let me do that. That was kind of a way to keep me busy unless I was falling asleep in the car driving the Adirondacks. I was a little kid, you know, 5, 6 years old, so it was very cool. Today we provide kids as cargo into the rear of the car, and they don't get to touch anything or interact with their parents, but that's another matter for another day. All for the safety of the child, of course. Anybody else? Let's see. How about Ben? Are you still there? KF2ID, K2BAR. Okay, Mr. Noel.
I think the type of antenna that I'm proposing would be called a half-square loop antenna. Okay, I see a commercial version of it.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Half-square loops, we should look that up. That's good. What about your AM broadcast listening when you were, or shortwave broadcasting when you were a wee one? What did you listen to on what?
Believe it or not, I had a 6-volt radio that was rescued from a junk car and a big honking resistor that was commercially available at any auto supply store. And it tuned, it had tuned RF stages, and I had a little 1-tube or 2-tube shortwave converter that was hooked up to it. And I have no idea what bands it got because it wasn't calibrated for much. A, B, C, D. And the radio was one of the first radios that would actually tune. And I opened it up one day and looked inside. There was like about 6 variable inductors, you know. It's like the rod that's in inside of a, I guess you'd call it ferrite. And the way the radio tuned is it had a motor that drove the dial and the ferrite in and out. And when it got all the way back to one, I guess it was like, I don't know, it was spring-loaded. And it had like a a mechanism with a flywheel, so it kept it at a constant speed. But if you hit a station, and you could assume strong, not so strong, and weak. And it, when it got all the way to the end, a big solenoid, it goes, and back, it'd be down to the 550. And I was using it on short waves for a long time.
Well, that's neat. That's absolutely neat. Don, my God, I think you were born with an AM antenna in one ear and a ham radio antenna in the other. But we'll want to hear it from you to confirm. WJEK, K2BAR.
K2BAR, W2JEK. I remember building crystal sets when we lived in Staten Island during the war. And, you know, just listened and stuff like that. And my father had gotten me one of these Morse code practice sets, but I never got to learn the code at that age. I guess the first good shortwave receiver we got was a used National NC-57, which was being used with as a novice receiver when we first got my novice ticket back in 1951. And later we upgraded to a Hallicraft SS-76. One other radio thing that Noel mentioned, the auto radio. The auto radios use the 262 kilocycle IF rather than the 455. So their selectivity is a bit sharper. And I think that's why they were as good as they were. People were picking things up with those, that, and they were made better, too, I think, than the AC-DC-5s that most people had. And I think that's part of it. My father used the AC, the had a Chrysler with and the AM radio, and it had he had a Gonset tri-band converter ahead of it. Well, that was for 80, 20, and 10 meters. And he had a mobile rig in the car, which was a Harvey Wells powered by a dynamo. So that was another use of the broadcast radio. And one of my friends, John K1H, listens into the beacon band. Let me drop it a second. And he listens. He's down in around the 200 to 400 range most of the time. But for an idea of what he did, he wound a coil around a piece of tubing and maybe had a couple taps on it here and there. But what he did with it, he took a piece of ferrite rod, like from one of these ferrite rod antennas, and he would put that wire in series with his antenna wire, which is like a long wire or something. And actually, by just sliding that ferrite rod in and out, he could tune that thing right up on the nose and be surprised how much improvement you get in your signal. So, I know, of course, he's logged thousands of these beacons that they have down in the low-frequency range. But would it also work on your AM broadcasting, I'm sure. I know some people go way out into the end of Cape Cod and set up a beverage antenna, and they listen to South American stations on the same frequencies that we're broadcasting on here, but the rejection of the beverage is such that it hears the distant station. Back to net, W2JK.
That's very cool. So how big a ferrite rod and how big a, you know, would you use how big a piece of tubing, how many turns around the tubing, of what kind of wire, do you remember, roughly speaking?
No, I had a piece of cardboard tubing from a, one of the things that, I have a fax machine that has that film on it, and this is the stiff cardboard tubing, so it's about a little over 3/4, maybe 7/8 of its outside diameter. And I just wound some coils, some turns on it. I must not have a, using fine wire, let's say, of the 28 gauge or something like that. I on a whole bunch of turns on it, put a tap, went some more turns, so maybe that'd be about 3 or 4 inches long. And then I just run the, you put that in series with the antenna, and just by experiment, finding out where the ferrite rod is. It's just a, I guess it's just about a 3/8 inch diameter, or even smaller, whatever they used on these rod antennas. It took the wire off and just used the ferrite rod itself.
Excellent. Okay, so you just slide the ferrite rod in, away you go. Good. Very nice. Anybody have any questions for Don about that before we move down the list? Alrighty. WE2R, where did you start?
In my grandmother's house was a fairly large console radio with a built-in phonograph and an FM band. I don't remember exactly, but there was a dial with a, shortwave band. I decided that would be a neat thing to have. Nobody in the house listened to it anymore. So I took the chassis out of the cabinet and took it home, and there was a bare chassis with the tubes. And I don't remember what kind of antenna I used, and I didn't have the dial anymore, so I was really shooting in the dark frequency-wise. But that's what I used to listen to shortwave on. And now I think back, and I think, boy, it sure would be nice to have that old radio intact. What a nice antique piece it would have been. Oh, well, back to net. This is WE2R.
Yeah, I know. We've all had that. I had a Firestone Wings that came to me pretty beat up. It was had a beautiful wood laminate case. Unfortunately, it already started to delaminate when I got it, like someone had left it in the rain or something. But it worked pretty well, so I slathered some white paint on it just because I thought I could. You know, then put the radio back in the chassis and just to freshen it up because it was pretty grody. That, you know, I washed the wood, let it dry, and threw some white paint on it. So, but, you know, if it hadn't started delaminating, I would have started, you know, thinking about doing a full restoration. But had the original dial, not the original fabric on the speaker grill, but it was kind of neat. It had AM and long wave, and then had the low end of the shortwave spectrum. But I can remember listening to, when I lived in Louisiana, northern Louisiana in 1970-71, I remember running wire out in the yard and listening to Lum and Abner from, you know, let's see, where was that? That was from a station in Iowa. What I'm trying to think, it was WHO or not. That doesn't make sense. No, maybe it does. I don't remember. Anyway, something of that nature. It was neat. But they used to replay Lum and Abner episodes at night. You know, since I lived in Shreveport, and they had KEEL, so that was on 710. That was the top 40, big top 40 blowtorch station in the 70s. So I hearing WOR was not an option, except on those rare occasions on a Sunday night. About every once a month on Sunday night, KEEL would go off air to do antenna meetings for 4 to 6 hours. I would then be in my glory listening to the AM broadcast band, trying to see if I could hit WR. I could sometimes, but it was always very weak. Anyway. Did I miss anybody? Alrighty. Well, that was pretty cool. In any case, what modern radios do we use? I mean, Jim answered the question for himself, but anybody else, what are you using now? Anybody want to chirp up with something? Or do you just not bother? That was the other question. Yeah, do you bother me? I use an 80-40 trap dipole, or sometimes a 40-meter Envis antenna as my two antennas of preference to listen to AM broadcast on. Anybody else have anything else?
2JK.
Don, go right ahead.
Okay, I mentioned the old time radio station. There is a station, I forget what the frequency, what the call sign is, it's a Canadian station, 740. And I listen to this on my car radio, in the car that I have now. I mean, that's right in the air, 770, but you have good reception on it, believe it or not. Just what the antenna on my car is actually the some wires inside the back window. And I also have it on my FT840 here. I have it in one of the memories here for that, for that station. Of course, I have, in the morning I usually listen to 880 News, and that's about it on AM for me. As far as shortwave listening, I'm really into that. I got into ham radio more so than... because my father was a ham, and never really got into the shortwave or the AM broadcast and stuff at all. Back on that, W2JK.
Good. All right. Any other check-ins for the net tonight? Any other comments, questions, confusions? Anybody else want to bring up another subject, please call K2BAR.
It's K2ZO. I just want to contact Tony.
Go ahead.
K2AMI, did you get the package I left for you?
K2ZO, in fact, I have it, and I'm monitoring 955 with it right now. I'm trying to learn the operation of the radio, but all the device, and it seems to be fine. I'll have to speak to you on a landline real soon, maybe probably tomorrow morning.
Okay, well, I ran into a little problem there with George. He's got a malfunction on the unit that he uses when he sleeps, so we were trying to fix that today, and it's obvious it's not fixable, so we're going to go tomorrow and pick up a new one. I don't know what you call it, but I know you own one of those things that helps you breathe at night, and... So that's where I was, and that's why I took off after I dropped it off. So no problem. Give me a call anytime, or I'll call you. I'll call you tomorrow, some day time on my cell phone. Okay.
One quick question: have you changed the battery in there recently?
No, I did not, but I probably need to check it and see what voltage it is. Is it holding memory?
So far it is. I thought I'd put a new battery in. I did want to make sure that the battery in there wasn't recently changed. I'll change it and put a new one in.
Okay. If you need a holder and want to use a standard battery, I have a holder for you.
It's a 9-volt battery with a battery clip on the top. No problem.
Okay. I didn't realize that's what it was. Okay.
I'll speak to you tomorrow. Give me a call when you have a chance.
Okay. Yeah, I have two of them. The other one here I hardly ever use, so there you go.
Very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow and work out some details.
Okay, back to that.
Okay. Very cool. What kind of radio is it, Mr. Tony?
Scanner, so it's a realistic scanner.
Okay. I have one of those kicking around here, too. The Bearcat that does trunking, but I don't know how to make it that work. I haven't bought the software for it. It's an older one. Then I have another one that's like a Radio Shack realistic scanner. It's pretty good, too. I don't remember which one, the Pro something, but it's a decent one. Anyway, that one's not on the bench right now. The other one is. Alrighty. Anybody else have anything they want to throw out at the net tonight? Any topic they want to discuss? Questions, comments, confusions?
One with computers.
Go right ahead, Noel.
Virgin Mobile, for $150, will sell you a device called an MIFI 2200. You turn it on. Even though it's Virgin Mobile, connected to the Sprint network, supposedly much faster than dial-up, by about 5 to 10 times faster. It'll cost you $40 a month, and you can use it for 2 months out of the year, and it'll come back, you know, like if you wanted for vacation, whatever, you could turn it on for 1 month, skip two or three, and turn it on for another month. You could, it also will act as a Wi-Fi hotspot, and you could connect up to, wirelessly of course, up to 5 users' computers at the same time.
Yeah, actually I have something similar to that. You've probably seen my little USB cell modem. Well, in addition to that, I have a router into which it plugs in. It's a CradlePoint MBR 1000, all I need to do is just put power on it and slam the USB cell card into it. Wait a minute or so, and it logs itself into the AT&T network and gives me 5 hardwire connections plus, I forget what it is, it's 5 or 10 wireless connections on the Wi-Fi side. And it is very cool. It is very, very cool. In fact, my goal is to set it up so that my mobile D-Star hotspot will use that as the internet uplink. So you'll have Wi-Fi access and D-Star access if you're in the proximity of my truck. I think that'd be very, very cool. In any case, now that my van's back, once I figure out how I want to deck it out, that's what I'm going to do. So anybody else have any thoughts?
This is the size of a fat credit card, and it will run 4 hours on a charge on an internal battery. And you can, if you don't happen to be working for AT&T, you can buy 100 megabytes for $10 if you want to use it for a weekend or something, you know, when you were laying camped or something. Put it in a drawer, not use it for 6 months, and then sign up for another 100 megabytes for $10, or unlimited. Unlimited for a month for $40, and then not have it the next month. So, for somebody who is going camping, it looks very attractive. No contract.
Yeah, I mean, they do that, and it is very attractive. A lot of people use it for exactly what you're talking about, especially snowbirds and things like that, weekend campers and the like. I have an unlimited data plan permanently, and it's heavily discounted, but I do have to pay for it personally. It's well worth every penny, I'll tell you that right now. So, in any case, I don't know what else to say, but I do recommend it. Mine is not a credit card size, mine's a more steroidal device. But, both have application, I think they're great. Different shapes and sizes, depends on how far you want to reach. If 30 feet's enough, and it generally is, that's fine. But, for some of us, we want a little bit more oomph and a little more capacity and throughput, so... Well, it's good. I mean, maybe you'll see them as MiFi and a few other things as well. One of the things I'd like to try at some point is if someone has a femtocell device for, let's say, AT&T or Verizon, I want to plug the femtocell device into a router that's uplinking through another cell carrier's data network. So if we have a femto from Verizon, we'd use an AT&T uplink. And if we had a Verizon uplink, we would use an AT&T, femtocell or microcell, they call theirs. And see what it'd be like to run voice over IP cellular over another network's data network. So I think that might be marvelous just for the grin of it. So let's say one carrier had coverage in an area where another one didn't. you could actually set up essentially a cellular hotspot via the other carrier's data backbone. It'd be kind of neat. Some application to that for obvious reasons for MCOM and things like that, special events, family gatherings and the like. Maybe even in your camping scenario, Mr. Noel. Anybody have any comments or questions about that? No, just as a little background, the femtocell, F-E-M-T-O, cell, C-E-L-L, is a technology that basically lets you have a personal cell site, and you subscribe with your carrier for it, with your broadband carrier for it, and it allows you to basically have your own private base station to talk to with your cell phone. And usually what they do is if you originate a call at home and then you transition to the public cell network, you don't burn any minutes on your cell network plan. Basically, the whole duration of that call is, when you leave your home and go off to do whatever you're doing, you leave the domain space of your femtocell, then you don't accrue minutes, you don't accrue billable minutes on the public net, which is very cool. Anybody else? This is K2BAR. Alrighty. Any last minute announcements, questions, comments, confusion? Alright, everybody, appreciate your coming and having a great night. This is a good conversation, a little diverse tonight, which is good. Everybody, charge your batteries, get your Go kits all squared away, make sure you know where things are, know where your flashlights are. Get your act together and think about what you can cobble together as a communications alternative. Just reminder that should we lose 7-9, I think we'll be using one or other repeaters in a windstorm or rain, whatever we have. We would use 146.535, which I believe is the county RACI's frequency. That's the one we're using for Simplex, so 146.535, so keep that in mind as well. And we are a week and a half from the VHF contest as well. Keep that in mind as well. So it all should be fun. So thank you very much. This is K2BAR, W2TTT. Thank you to the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of the repeater. And wishing everybody a fine good night.